update. The book is at the printer.
Oh, really?
How about that?
That's some good stuff. Look at you, all published author and stuff, big man.
I'm a little bit stunned by it. It's been a great process, and I want to give a big shout out to all the folks at Worthy Publishers. This is my publisher, and they're out in Brentwood, Tennessee. For those of you outside of the Nashville area, that's just right down the road here from Nashville, just south of us. Great group of people, and they have been so patient and kind and working with me.
Well,
they don't have to be, but they have chosen to be.
Nice.
And I was just thrilled to work with them, and still are. We got a pretty big rollout that they're going to have planned for a lot of media stuff coming, and you'll be hearing more about that as we get closer to the launch date of September 16th.
Oh, there you go.
September 16th. I mean, that it's going to be in bookstores everywhere. I mean, I think Barnes & Noble's, Books A Million, Lifeway, hundreds of independent booksellers. I think Hallmark has come to the publisher, and they want to bring it on board with them.
Oh, that'd be perfect. That'd be a perfect fit.
I'm just floored by this.
Hey.
And I've had a few folks that have done some advanced readings. Oh, by the way, here's something special. If you want to do this, you want to take advantage of it, you can go to our website, standingwithhope.com. And the publisher has allowed a exclusive advanced version of it that you can read. You can download it to your Kindle.
There you go.
Or your iPad if you have a Kindle app or whatever, your iPhone or whatever.
How very 21st century of you.
And it's really easy to read. I mean, you know my motto is, you can read it in the bathroom. I know because I wrote it there.
Yeah, I held my tongue.
But it's, you know, I know my caregivers. I know how stressed that we are, and we don't have time to read the next great American novel. And you don't want
to
have
time to write it.
And I don't have time to write it. And you don't want to have something that's going to be a bunch of list of things that you got to do. It's got to be something to help you right now. I mean, I'm not talking about this afternoon. I'm talking about right this minute now. And that's what I try to focus on. What can I do that's going to be helpful if you only have 30 seconds to read something? And I know people like that. I've been like that myself, that you just don't have the time. You're so stressed about things. And if you only have 30 seconds or a minute to read it, you're going to get something out of it right away. That's the way I wrote this book. And I didn't use a lot of big words because I don't know many. And
it costs too much to print.
I have a product of South Carolina's public school education, so y'all going to have to just be family. I think I told you that when I turned in my first book, and I told the editors, I said...
Was it in crayon, by the way?
Close. I told the editors, I said, you know, look, I was a composition major, but it was music composition.
There you go.
And I am from South Carolina, born and raised there. And I said, y'all be family. Sucker came back with so much red ink, it looked like he'd been stabbed. I mean, I kind of wept over it. I was like, darn, man. I thought I had a little bit more game going on. I was like, no. So I need a lot of – and the folks at Worthy Publishers have been great for editorial support. I mean, we were back and forth, and the main editor that was assigned to me with this, just a great guy, and he – you know, he would get those changes in. And then also, we talked about it. We weren't just – they didn't just say, okay, did you make a grammar mistake here, whatever. I talked about it philosophically with them. Okay, am I saying this in the right way? Do I really capture what it is I want to do here? And they took the time to go and have those kind of dialogues with me, which I was very pleased about, because I really labored over every sentence of this book. I knew that I felt the weight of the people that I'm trying to reach. I know how stressed out these people are, and you don't want another, you know, book of platitudes or a book of, you know, just kind of, well, trust in the Lord and always look to the sunlight as the fresh wind of, you know, I mean, you just don't want that kind of crap, man. I mean,
where did that come from? Well, that doesn't exist in you.
Well, I know, and it doesn't, right. but I've been the recipient of people saying these things.
Understood, yeah.
And there's one thing I said in there, and I think you'll like this, John. People, in lieu of knowing what to say to me or to Gracie, we get things like, well, look at the testimony you guys have, or look at the work you're doing with Standing with Hope and so forth. And those are great things. But that's not what consoles us in the middle of the night when she's having something crazy going on, or when she's going in for her 70th surgery, or when she's just in pain or seizing or going into respiratory arrest. I don't think about that. And then other people will say the consolation of speculation, I call it. The consolation of speculation. They'll say, well, obviously God has a reason for keeping you here or you wouldn't be here. Well, that doesn't mean anything to me either. That's not what sustains me in this. And I bet it doesn't sustain you either. As you're listening to this, you're thinking, yeah, I've heard that. People say that to me.
People say that to you when you scrape your knee.
Well, we try to somehow speak for God in this thing. We somehow, and if it's really messy, then we want to wash God's hands of it and clean it up for God, make it all nice and tidy. If you really go back and look at Scripture, and we got it all in the nice, clean English version, you look back at the original language in Hebrew, there's some very messy things in there, and God's perfectly content to leave it there. I mean, He's not in any big hurry to doesn't feel the need to apologize for what He's doing or what He allows. And we simply get all uncomfortable. It's very unsettling.
Well, and last I checked, I didn't hear him soliciting any advice.
No, we're not consultants. And as my father said, God's got this problem. He thinks he's God.
There you go.
And so what I went after this in this book, and I wanted to make sure that my fellow caregivers knew that there was somebody out there that really understood this journey. And I wrote this to the 23-year-old version of myself that took this on. With armed only with love and a goofy sense of humor and a relentless perseverance to somehow do this, but I didn't have anything else. I mean, I didn't have any formal. I'm in the William Hung of healthcare. I've had no formal training. Some of you are not going to get that, but the ones that do get it, that's just darn funny. I don't care who you are, that's just funny. And I didn't have anything, and I didn't know what to do, and I wanted to write this book in a way that would somehow reach that kid. I remember this; it's a pretty graphic story, but y'all just have to be family as well.
Hang on, let me get the dumb button ready.
But I remember one time, and I was about 25 years old, and Gracie had had a pretty brutal surgery. It was a fusion surgery, trying to save her right ankle, right leg. And they worked on this thing, and these things, in reality, the surgeon told me later, said these things are much more painful than the amputation surgery, if you can believe that. It's a pretty painful surgery. And they have to give her a whole lot of, post-operative painkillers and so forth, and it's always a trick to manage that with her. Well, I'd been with her for 2 or 3 days straight now at this point, and this is in the middle of the night, about 2 o'clock in the morning, and she asked me to go down to get her something to drink. And I haven't slept, I've been sleeping in that chair there at the hospital room, and I came back into the room here we are in the middle of the night, and she's seizing. I don't know, have you ever seen anybody go into a seizure?
Yeah, yes. Long story short.
Well, it's a horrific thing to watch, and I know that you all listening, many of you are dealing with this, and my brother has a daughter, I've told you many times, CP, that cerebral palsy, for those of you in McDuncan. And she seizes all the time, and it's a tough thing to watch. And this is my wife. I'm 25 years old, and I went and got the nurses and called them in there real quickly. I'm trying to hold her down because she's got tubes and all that kind of stuff in her. She's going to hurt herself, and fall out of bed or whatever. And I'm holding her down, and she's thrashing around. She's throwing up. I mean, it's a mess. It's a nightmare. And afterwards, she kind of blacks out. And from what I understand, after a seizure, usually the patient is much more rested, and so she got into a good heavy sleep for the first time. But I'm sitting there kind of shell-shocked, and I didn't know what was going on. Man, I mean, I'm just a dumb kid. I'm just 25 years old. I didn't know anything, and I'm still covered with vomit, and I mean, it was just an awful mess. And at 3 a.m. now, and I went out there, and they used to have at the room there at the hospital, your chart would be right there in that drawer, that cabinet there. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but now they have everything electronically. But at the time, they didn't, and they had it right there, and there was her chart. Well, I've always been told, you can't read the chart. That's only for doctors and nurses, and you're not special enough to read it. At 3 a.m, after watching what I just watched, after being there for 3 days sleeping getting no sleep around the clock, I didn't care. And so I grabbed her chart, and it was volume 4 of 4, and it was thicker than the Atlanta phone book.
Mm.
I mean, this was a big – I mean, how many people know what a phone book is anymore? I just realized, man, I have
– Yeah, I hear tell about these things called phone booths as well.
Well, and so I'm sitting there, and so I grabbed this thing and started reading because I had not read Gracie's chart. I didn't really understand what had happened to my wife, and we'd been married for a couple of years at that point. And so I'm sitting there in the hallway there at St. Thomas Hospital with my back against the hall, and I'm reading the chart, and I just ignored the nurses, doctor. I didn't care. I'm just going to do it. I've still got vomit on me. I know that's kind of graphic, but I don't care. And I sit there and read this thing, and I realized this is only one of her big volumes. I mean, this is volume four of this sucker. And that's, she's gone on now. She's had treatment at 12 different hospitals, 60 plus doctors. And as I was reading this thing, though, it was giving a summary of all the stuff that had happened in prior. And I realized this is not just a car wreck she had. This was devastation. And I was so overwhelmed by this. I didn't know what to do. I was just, man, I was floundering. I mean, I went into kind of a dark place at that point, and it took a long time. And I still have to fight against that, of that, oh, my God, what am I going to do here? And that's who I wrote the book to, was that kid that's sitting there in the hallway at St. Thomas, covered in gunk and just no sleep, stressed out and completely overwhelmed. That's who I wrote this book to.